entitled The Built Environment as Predictor of Pedestrian Activity, Findings from the Lean and Green in Motown Project, Patricia Y. Miranda.
Good morning. Usually we co-present with a community partner, but those that are left in town are double booked, so I'll be presenting on behalf of the Healthy Environments Partnership this morning. I have no financial relationships to disclose here. The Lean and Green in Motown project builds upon and extends ongoing research of the Healthy Environments Partnership, or HEP. It's a community-based participatory research project that has worked together since 2000 to better understand how social and physical environments impact heart health in neighborhood residents in Detroit, Michigan. All partners are engaged in decisions about research questions, study design, data collection, interpretation of results, and then use of results to inform community changes. HEP is currently collecting a variety of data in East Side, Northwest, and Southwest Detroit to better understand how stress, diet, and the environment affect the risk of heart disease and obesity in Detroit residents. This presentation stems from the first specific aim of the Lean and Green in Motown project, to assess independent and collective scientific contributions of a method of assessing characteristics of the built environment for understanding the means by which the built environment influences behavioral and biological factors associated with obesity and related to comorbidities among African American, Hispanic, and white residents of Detroit. Now, in January and February of 2006, we conducted a series of 8 focus groups, discussions with Detroit residents. The purpose of the focus group was to better understand the ways that neighborhoods can impact physical activity, the foods eaten by community residents, and other factors associated with risk for heart disease. 2 focus groups were conducted on East Side Detroit, 2 in Northwest Detroit, and 4 in Southwest Detroit, where 2 were in English and 2 were in Spanish. Each of the focus groups was approximately 1.5 hours in duration and included 6 to 12 participants. And then the racial and ethnic composition of the focus groups reflected the Detroit communities that were involved. Participants were asked in particular about their thoughts on new paved trails or pathways, the greenways that were being developed in several Detroit neighborhoods, to provide new spaces for physical activity for those residents. And from those focus groups, we learned that pedestrian use of parks and greenways would be facilitated by outdoor community events, controlled dogs, and if more people were present on the greenways. One participant noted, "If I saw more people walking, I would be more involved." We also learned that stray or loose dogs, lack of police presence and traffic would discourage use of parks and greenways. So between June 2006 and October 2008, data were collected by 10 community observers trained in systematic direct observation along 3 greenways in Detroit, so East Side, Northwest, and Southwest Detroit. And we used 3 different instruments designed for this study. At this point, we've collected 3 waves of data, August through October of 2006, and then May through October of 2007 and 2008. And we're at the very, very early stages of analysis to examine trends over time. The 3 instruments include the monthly long form, the environmental short form, and the pedestrian characteristics form. The 22-item built environment long form was collected once a month by a single observer who actually walked the entire length of the greenway, assessing characteristics of the built environment, and we'll look at that further in future analyses. But for this analysis, we focus on the overall count of pedestrians created in the pedestrian characteristics form, which is what you see here, and on the short form, on observations collected through October of 2007. So here we see our 6-item pedestrian form, and it's adapted from McKinsey et al. To measure pedestrian characteristics like gender and age, and physical activity type and intensity was also collected at that time. So observers recorded the characteristics of only the pedestrians that walked directly in front of them on their side of the street so that basically they could really get a good look at them. And we also have our sixth item, built environment short form, and it assesses more of the dynamic elements like traffic that are going along also at that same station at the same time that the observers are observing the pedestrians that are walking near them. This information was collected at 16 different time points during 1 week, each month during those months of observation time from 29 total stations along the greenways. In this analysis, we used the dichotomous variables of police presence, presence of other pedestrians, presence of dogs not on leashes. We have some issues with the number of negatives that we can get into with that, and then the categorical variables of noise on the path or trail. We first tested univariate relationships between each of these variables and number of pedestrians, controlling for time of day and year to create a safety index. Now, to create the safety index, we tested a multivariate model that included all the independent variables identified through the focus groups. So police presence, other pedestrians, dogs not on leashes, noise, traffic, and then presence of semis was also brought up at points. From this information, we created our safety index, which included dichotomous versions of those items that were significantly associated with the number of pedestrians observed on the greenway. The index was coded to have one equal the greater relationship to safety based on multivariate results. So then the final items in the safety index included police presence, other pedestrians present on the greenway, presence of dogs not on leashes, and noise. These relationships were also tested controlling for month of the year to try to look at what months were in common across each year, and then the same relationship that we see here was found for each of those variables. We then modeled our safety index on number of pedestrians. Here in Table 2, we see that the higher the safety score based on our safety index, the greater number of pedestrians were observed walking on the greenway. So in other words, when observers noted police presence, other pedestrians, no stray dogs, and there was more noise, they observed a greater number of pedestrians using the greenway. We examined if the relationship between the safety index and number of pedestrians observed on the greenways was the same between the 2 years of observation and found that the relationship remained the same across the years. Now, since we saw that the relationship between safety and number of pedestrians observed was the same from 2006 to 2007, obviously the next steps are to examine the independent items of the index across years and see if there were any changes. But based on these models, we anticipate that independently, more police presence, presence of other pedestrians, and fewer stray dogs would increase pedestrian use. Furthermore, we plan to examine the context of use of the pedestrians. We observed them as far as if they were walking alone or with a partner or in groups. And to see if characteristics varied by time of day or by study area. Two of our greenways are along much busier streets, and one is in a more residential neighborhood, so we can see if these relationships change by area. And now year three data has been collected, and so we'll compare observations for trends across all 3 years of observations. Now, there are multiple implications that we have for health-promoting activities that could encourage pedestrian use of greenways by increasing safety. First, we'd encourage cities to assure police presence along greenways. In addition, we'd suggest enacting leash laws or perhaps having designated fenced areas where dogs can run off leashes that enforce the regulations in other areas. Furthermore, although we don't know for sure, but first from focus groups and then from our interpretation of this data, when considering noise levels on the greenways, our results suggest that isolated quiet areas may discourage use, possibly due to lack of safety. Therefore, we'd encourage structural factors such as nodes or destinations along the greenway that encourage others to use the greenway, in addition to sponsored activities and events that similarly encourage other people to use the greenway. So thank you very much, and I'd like to acknowledge one of my co-authors, Amy Schultz, here in the first row as well. So thank you.
Stand up here and take any questions from the audience. Please stand up when you give a question. Maybe you can identify yourself too. I'm sorry we didn't do that before.
Fred Kiesler, health officer at Grand Harris County. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that the addition of the dog issue is big because our department oversees both animal bite investigations and we have animal control. And invariably, we have many bites of people who are joggers and walkers. And I've never done a statistic. Did you look at the statistics and actual bites on joggers and walkers?
We haven't, but we should maybe perhaps look at something like that to see about rates and maybe reports by areas, because there were some of the areas that reported more than others. They brought up this issue of stray dogs and kind of the fear and how they feel it makes it less safe in the area. But so that's a suggestion. Thank you.
Other questions? Please stand up and identify yourself.
My name is Joe Tamaka. I'm curious, your safety index had a measure of how many other people were around, and then your outcome is how many people were walking around.
So
the, I was wondering, I mean, if you take the other, I mean, there's some level of confounding between your predictor and your outcome?
So in the index, it's just if other people were, it was the dichotomous, you saw somebody else or not. And so that could have been across the street. So it's sort of safety by, you know, people have talked a lot about, they'll feel safer if somebody else can see them in case, you know, anything were to happen. And so the observations, the actual number of pedestrians counted were just who passed directly in front of the observer. So there are actually probably other people in the surrounding area that weren't observed within that count. Did I clarify that? Right, but so somebody other than who walked directly in front of you. They weren't double counted. It wasn't, they were counted as another pedestrian. It was only if there was actually somebody else in the proximity. Did I just make that more confusing or?
I have a comment. Any questions?
There were two more hands.
My name is Amy Perkins, but I was wondering if you plan on testing out for age, whether or not, you know, how young the kids are that are by themselves, and then gender, and also if you would account for homeless people that happen to camp out in the past.
Oh, the homeless people, I don't know anything. We didn't measure them in any sort of way, so we don't have a way to look at that. As far as a sense of fear or something, okay. We don't have any kind of measure for that, but as far as the other characteristics we do, those are other characteristics that the observers recorded, age and gender, along with the group status issue, to see if there are differences by these groups in use of. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
Yes, please. Two questions in the back. Let's see. Here, go ahead.
Sure. So it actually kind of relates to the presentation that came before us. He was giving kind of recommendations about for older age adults with kind of like parks, destinations like stores, places that are nearby walkable sort of destinations that people would be further encouraged to get out and walk to those destinations that are nearby instead of obviously if there was nowhere to go, then they wouldn't walk. So if there are things like parks or some areas have exercise stations, you know, along the way, and so that those destinations sorts of spots like stores or and then again, activities as well, if there's something, you know, programs going on the Greenway.
There's a question in the back, Barb?
Right, yes. So the noise variable created a lot of discussion for our group because we were trying to figure out, because at first it seemed counterintuitive, because I would think that it would be related to traffic perhaps or not. But we ended up looking at it, and it's just, we feel like it indicates that there's more activity and more presence, because the actual measure of the variable, let's see if I can see it from here. It's actually... The definition is operationalized by ability to hear somebody speaking next to you versus, like, can you hear noise? So it's very quiet if you can hear noise, say, from across the street. Can you hear someone talking from across the street? And it progresses, and, you know, or can you only hear somebody that's directly right next to you? So I think that kind of makes it more directly related to activity and the presence of other people because of how it's operationalized. Did I answer you? Okay.
Question? Please stand.
I'm Dr. Van Vogt from Utah. Sometimes I'm a tourist. I went down to Oklahoma City, and I was looking around the city, and they showed me a beautiful park, velvety grass and willow trees. They said a couple of years ago they had built walls around the benches to shelter the people once in a while, and waist-high hedges. And they said the grade went extremely high, and no one used the park anymore. So that's in terms of structures. Mm-hmm. In terms of noise, I used to jog along the Cape Cod Canal, and when the fog horns were sounding, they were pretty loud, but it was pleasant.
So related to that, so we'll be able to examine those relationships. In the long form, what we do is, because visibility is an issue, and that kind of shrub height, if there is a barrier to visibility between that 3 foot to 9 foot high area, so there can be higher trees and it can still be safe, but that is, people do feel that is unsafe, and I think it is actually, it has been shown to be related to being unsafe if there's something that hinders visibility, because people talk about fear of someone being able to jump out after you. Like,
if your park benches are just slats that are open with little poles to hold them up, you're all set. But if you have a definite barrier, mm-hmm. that's a problem.
Right.
Okay.
Question back there.
Yes, I'm
Mm-hmm.
I have a comment. You mentioned like bulb outs and things like that. A few years ago in Kingsport, Tennessee, where I hang out and cause trouble a lot, we had a woman named Ann Lusk come in from Harvard, and she had been in Michigan. She actually had a design background and had been noted for her work on greenways, and had written something on like the 23 principles of greenways design. And she had studied everything from social capital, which was, you know, like at bulb outs people would gather. So I'm wondering if you're starting to study the proactive, prospective kinds of things for design of future greenways, not just the analysis of the current condition. And the other thing I might mention is there's a lot of economic benefit that we're starting to look at with regard to greenways and trails. And I was wondering if you're opinion leaders and not just your folks from your health department, but everyone, even your Safe Routes to Schools folks, are starting to look at this as a potential economic asset in your community. Mm-hmm. So it's really two parts.
I'm actually going to defer this question to the principal investigator of the study that's sitting here. I'm now across the country doing my postdoc from this work, and so she's more involved. There certainly are intervention efforts, or if you'd like to talk to her further about that. It's outside my knowledge.
Well, why don't we tackle that in later
discussion. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, the next presentation is individual and neighborhood disadvantage modifies the association between neighborhood walkability and BMI. Gina Lavasi, PhD.
Thank you.